The opinions expressed on the following program do not reflect the views and opinions of Audio Journal, its board of directors, staff, or volunteer readers. Thank you for listening to Audio Journal.
This program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by Audio Journal. Hello, everyone. This is Tracy welcoming you to Everyday Health, an Audio Journal program in which we share information about healthy living. This broadcast is for informational purposes only, and suggestions should always be discussed with your healthcare providers. Audio Journal is a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. Now, did you know that May is both Asthma and Mental Health Awareness Month? Well, this broadcast is going to have two parts addressing both. Our first segment will be an article about asthma from Periodicals writer Amy Maturana Rendurl. We'll look at the symptoms that we might be overlooking in case there's an asthma diagnosis in our future. The second part will be based on a compilation of suggestions by multiple mental health professionals to manage that tricky experience that we all have, known as stress. It was edited by writer Melissa Matthews, and we'll conclude with today's tip. So to begin, when asthma attacks. I did not know, and perhaps you didn't either, that you can develop asthma as an adult, and it does not always involve wheezing. That persistent cough that you've had since the wintertime, it could be a lingering effect of cold, dry weather irritating your airways, but it also could be a sign of asthma, which often goes undetected because most of us associate the lung condition with obvious breathing problems, says Dr. Andrea Papalardo-Wilichovich, an allergist and immunologist with U1 Health in Chicago. In reality, a lot of times asthma presents as other symptoms, yes, most notably as a cough. But wait a minute, your doctor never mentioned asthma when you were a kid, so why now? What gives? Well, a good portion of asthma cases actually occur later in life, says Dr. Sandhya Khurana, the medical director of the Mary Parks Center for Asthma, Allergy, and Pulmonary Care in Rochester, New York. That is particularly true for women. With that in mind, and in honor of Asthma and Allergy Awareness Month this month, let's take a breath and a deeper look. So what might cause adult onset asthma? Well, while it's not fully understood why some people develop the condition, experts have pinpointed a complex combination of factors that might contribute to overall risk. The first is genetics. Asthma does tend to run in families, though there's no way to test for a specific gene or mix of genes that indicates you're going to end up with it. Then there are severe respiratory infections. A bad respiratory infection can result in lung inflammation that can trigger asthma for the first time, says Dr. Sally Wenzel, the director of the University of Pittsburgh's Asthma and Environmental Lung Health Institute. Unfortunately, once that happens, it can remain as a chronic condition that you need to manage, she says. Then there are environmental exposures. Certain irritants like dust, chemicals, fragrances, and air pollution can make our lungs more sensitive and prone to inflammation. And of course, repeated exposure to those substances can make the inflammation worse and can trigger asthma, Dr. Khurana says. Then if there's a history of allergies, if you had seasonal allergies as a child, you just may be more likely to develop asthma as an adult, Dr. Wenzel says. The explanation? Well, the nose and lungs function as one unit, and when chronic inflammation occurs in one area, it can influence inflammation in the other. Then there could be sinus issues. Nasal polyps, which of course are inflammatory growths in the nose that can develop due to chronic congestion and cause drainage issues, are also linked to asthma, according to Dr. Wenzel. A shared immune response may explain the connection between the two. One sinus infection per year, well, that's probably not a big red flag. But when you start having 2 to 3 a year, you should go see an ear, nose, and throat specialist, Dr. Wenzel advises, just to make sure you're not developing a chronic inflammatory condition like chronic sinusitis. And being very overweight is, of course, a risk. It's associated with many illnesses, but most importantly, there's chronic low-grade inflammation throughout the body, which can occur always in the airways also and contribute to asthma development. Then there are hormones. Remember how we said women are more likely to develop asthma when they're older? Well, experts blame fluctuating estrogen and progesterone hormones in adulthood. Menopause specifically is associated with a higher risk of new onset asthma. Pregnancy is kind of a wild card. Some women may find their asthma improves, while others develop it or notice symptoms for the very first time. Now, why is it so tricky to diagnose? Well, as you may have gathered, the condition may not look all that dramatic. Although wheezing that keeps you up at night is a telltale sign and that should be dealt with immediately. But beyond that cough, it could also show up as shortness of breath during a workout, trouble breathing when it's humid outside, or even a slight tightness in your chest that comes and then goes. And these symptoms are often easy to mistake for age-related conditions like heart disease, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, known as COPD, or a decline in fitness levels, Dr. Khurana says. Additionally, people often have symptoms which can change intermittently, making it really difficult to spot patterns. When your asthma is not acting up, you can forget that there's anything wrong until it happens again, says Dr. Miriam Merchant, a pulmonologist at Thousand Oaks, Hampshire, and Primary Specialty Care in California. If the episodes are infrequent enough, it's something that you don't really think about, and you just might shrug it off. Well, coughing and wheezing that pops up when pollen counts are high could be overshadowed if you happen to be sneezy and congested. And some people have allergic asthma, which means their episodes are triggered by, well, you guessed it, allergies. An allergic reaction happens when your immune system responds to irritants such as dust, mold, pets, and pollen as threats. It's the exactly same way it would with viruses like the flu. With allergic asthma, you have symptoms of both conditions at once. Another scenario that Dr. Merchant sees, you can have someone who may have actually had asthma as a child, but was misdiagnosed with infections, she says. If you recall back and remember you had often bronchitis while growing up, or that your colds always ended up moving into your chest, you may actually have had asthma all along. Finally, humans tend to adapt, Dr. Wolochowicz points out. If you run up the stairs and get short of breath and start coughing, you're just not going to run up the stairs anymore. Even if it's subconscious, you likely change your behavior so you're more comfortable and you don't have to confront that underlying problem. Left untreated, however, inflammation in the lungs can worsen and reduce your lung capacity over time. All right, I think I might have it. Now what? If you're hearing all of this and thinking, gosh, maybe it's not so normal that I get winded carrying my laundry basket up a flight of stairs, or my itchy, watery eyes do seem to come with a lot of coughing, it is definitely worth checking in with your doctor. Many primary care clinicians are well-versed in the initial treatment of asthma, making them a great place to start. Be sure to show up to your appointment prepared, though. Simply naming a few vague symptoms can make it really hard for your doctor to discern what's happening. Be as specific as possible. For example, every time my family has a cold, everyone gets better in a few days, but my cough lingers for more than 2 weeks. Lay out your symptoms, what they sound like, how long they last, what makes them better, and what makes things worse. You can also ask for testing. Spirometry is the gold standard for asthma diagnosis. The test involves breathing into a device that measures airflow. If you end up having asthma and need more specialized care, or if this diagnosis is out of your doctor's specialty, ask for a referral to an allergist or a pulmonologist. An asthma action plan will be tailored for your needs. It may include a quick-acting rescue medication that reduces swelling in your airway during an attack, as well as a daily maintenance treatment to prevent flares and minimize any symptoms. If you also have seasonal allergies, you may want to look into allergy shots, which can desensitize you to specific triggers and reduce reaction. The key is recognizing these symptoms and seeking help. If you do indeed have asthma, the right treatment can help you breathe and live much more easily. And now for our part two of today's program, all about stress and multiple suggestions to really try to get control. We know that once those stress levels begin rising, life can get overwhelming too quickly. We already have a million plates spinning, perhaps, when, oh boy, here come 100 more things to juggle. That to-do list starts to look insurmountable and everything seems stacked against us and all we want to do is curl up in a fetal position. Well, not surprisingly, mental health experts say there are a lot of better ways to cope. And while we cannot control what's coming at us, we can change how we respond. These simple, intentional, science-backed shifts can calm our nervous systems, clear our heads, and help us regain a sense of control. The first suggestion by Dr. Megan Markham, a chief psychologist at A Mission for Michael, a mental health care center in California, says, do something unexpected. She writes, I recommend introducing a moment of novelty when your brain is stuck in a stress loop. Something unexpected, playful, or slightly unusual. That could be saying a sentence in a silly accent, naming five objects around you and make them rhyme, or listing them in alphabetical order, or simply stretch your arms in an exaggerated way. Because it's hard for the brain to hold high stress and novelty at the same time, these small, surprising actions can quickly interrupt anxiety and help one reset. These techniques work especially well because they don't require any special tools or a lot of time. Next, Liz Ross, a doctor and licensed clinical psychologist and founder of Coping Resource Center in Houston, says, change up how you speak to yourself. Your internal voice matters a lot, and research shows that second-person self-talking, you, reduces anxiety more effectively than first-person self-talk, such as I. So instead of saying, I can handle this, or I should not feel like this, try something like, you don't have to fix everything all at once, or you're allowed to feel overwhelmed. Now, why does this work? Well, second-person language creates psychological distance from the emotion and activates problem-solving pathways rather than threat pathways in our brains. This technique turns your inner critic into an inner coach. Next, from Dr. Lori Davis, a New York City-based clinical psychologist specializing in anxiety disorders, says, find comfort with keepsakes. Make a self-soothing box featuring items associated with positive memories, such as cards that you liked or something soft to feel, a pet's collar or a small toy from your childhood or something scented. The choices are endless as long as you find comfort in the objects you choose. When you're anxious or worried, take out the box and spend at least 10 minutes just going through it, thinking of memories attached to the items and how they make you feel. Nostalgia has a great ability to make one feel comforted. It serves as a wonderful way to promote positive feelings, which can offset negative feelings like anxiety and stress. Next, from Emily Reed Daniels, a certified counselor and creator of The Regulated Classroom, a program helping educators create emotionally stable environments, suggests we try shaking it off. Purposely shaking the body is actually a very quick way to get back to a state of homeostasis, which is the stable equilibrium we all want. You're looking to return your body to balance. Let's say you got off a really terrible phone call. Hang up, stand up, and literally shake every part of your body, and do it vigorously, arms, shoulders, head, and legs. Do it for at least 60 seconds, and up to a couple of minutes. Then shake your head like you're nodding no and twirl your lips like you're giving someone the raspberry. With as much sound as you can, she says. That vocalization helps to stimulate the vagus nerve, that path between our brain and organs, which helps activate our all-important parasympathetic nervous system and calm the body. Next, from Amareen Dhaliwal, a Tampa, Florida-based psychiatrist, says, practice some mindfulness. I know we hear it all the time, but she says when you first start to feel anxious, use a simple grounding action that helps break the continuing internal loop. This might look like pressing your feet into the floor, relaxing your jaw, wiggling your toes, or subtly shifting your posture. If you're stuck in traffic, you might notice the feeling of your hands on the steering wheel. Are they tight? Can you loosen the grip? Or the weight of your body in a seat. Can you shift? How does that feel? These actions actually help because anxiety feeds on speed and repetition. And interrupting the loop early slows the system down. It anchors attention in the present moment and reinforces the sense that stress is manageable rather than overwhelming. Next, from Dr. Stephen Sultanoff, adjunct faculty at the School of Education and Psychology at Pepperdine University, says, tickle your funny bone. Think of a hilarious moment. It can be a real situation or something from a show, a book, or a movie. While personal humor is more potent because you've interacted with the moment, so it's part of you, both are very helpful to get you laughing. And when laughter is present, cortisol, also known as the stress hormone, is reduced. Laughter also causes your muscles to contract and release, which is a common form of physical relaxation. And next, from Essen Pinardi, a licensed clinical social worker and founder of Eternal Wellness Counseling in Florida, says, change your body temp. Well, you only need to splash cold water on your face for about 20 to 30 seconds to interrupt a stress response. Feeling something cold on your cheeks, like an ice cube or water, can quickly feel grounding because it activates the parasympathetic nervous system. If you're at home and have time, you could also take a warm shower. Doing so combines temperature, pressure, and sensory input, all of which relaxes the nervous system. Next, you could make a pie chart of your life. This suggestion from Dr. Jenny Taitz, a licensed clinical psychologist and author of the book Stress Resets, How to Soothe Your Body and Mind in Minutes. When you're hyper-focused on one thing, it can lead to spiraling and negative bias. If you were laid off, for example, you might feel like you're not successful or everyone else is better off than you are. Create a visual in your mind of the different facets of your life can help you zoom out and get perspective. You'll recognize that this stressor is only one aspect of your life. Take a step back and think of the things that deeply matter: your relationships, your health, your hobbies, your spirituality, and what you are grateful for. This method helps strengthen our psychological flexibility, which is our ability to cope with, accept, and adjust to difficult situations. Next, from Tracy Vadakumcheri, a licensed therapist in Greater New York City area, says do some tapping. Bilateral tapping involves stimulating the left and right sides of one's body. It helps slow down and process stress in the moment. She suggests the butterfly hug. You face both palms towards you, twirl your thumbs together, and spread your fingers out. With your intertwined thumbs on your collarbone and hands on your chest, simply tap your fingers on the left slowly and then on the right, and repeat slowly. Slow tapping sends signals to your corpus callosum, which is the bundle of nerve fibers that help regulate emotion. Keep tapping for as long as you need to feel grounded or calm. And lastly, from Najama Davis, a licensed clinical social worker and psychotherapist in New Jersey, says put in way less effort. When your nervous system is overwhelmed, it prioritizes safety over productivity, which can make even simple tasks feel heavy, confusing, or impossible to begin. Lower the bar on purpose. Tell yourself it's enough to just show up. Don't worry about finishing anything. Start with the least demanding action of whatever you want to do. If you need to tackle a work assignment, open the document, jot down a messy sentence, maybe review a note or two. Tiny steps reduce paralysis and create a sense of momentum, which can reassure you that you're capable and not stuck. Small actions also release tension and help you shift from threat mode to problem-solving mode. Pair the task with something grounding, too, like a sip of water or a deep breath, so your body feels safe enough to start. So, paying attention to body and paying attention to mind are both terrific suggestions for anyone. And now in today's tip, something called the blood pressure list. This is a list of 36 phrases that might raise your blood pressure. So consider whether you've heard them and how you feel, or consider them before you say them and how you might make yourself or someone else feel. So the first, you look tired. Number two, smile. Number three, it's fine. Number four, I'm fine. Number five, calm down. Number six, relax. Number seven, you're so sensitive. Number eight, just saying. Number nine, no offense, but. Number 10, must be nice. Number 11, sorry, just seeing this. 12, wait, what's the plan? Number 13, let's just play that by ear. Number 14, did you try restarting your computer? Number 15, please listen carefully as our menu options have changed. Number 16, your call is important to us. Number 17, incorrect password. Number 18, software update required. Number 19, can I call you? Number 20, per my last email. Number 21, let's take this offline. Number 22, I'll wait. Number 23, any updates? Number 24, just to clarify. Number 25, going forward. Number 26, we've always done it this way. Number 27, he started it. Number 28, I'm bored. Number 29, we need to talk. Number 30, I'm sorry you were offended. Number 31, I was joking. Number 32, you're overreacting. Number 33, if that's what you want. Number 34, okay. Number 35, let's just drop it. And number 36, I don't know, what do you want for dinner? Well, now, if any of these phrases have irritated you just a bit, or you've irritated someone with them, take a pause. Practice the three R's. Recognize what you've just said or heard. Reframe it if you need it in a positive way, such as, that's their thought, not mine. And then decide how you want to release the situation. Let it go, back away, or respond, but with a thoughtful response. All tips to help us maintain our stress levels, stay in the present moment, and be aware of what we're doing. And that concludes Everyday Health from today. Thank you so much for joining us. Our broadcast, as you know, is for informational purposes only, and suggestions should always be discussed with your healthcare providers. This program is a production of Audio Journal, and we are a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. If you'd like a hard copy of our program schedule, either in large print or braille, please call us at 508-797-1117. Archived editions of our program are available on our website, audiojournal.org, or go to the Audio Journal app on your iPhone, your iPad, or your Android device. I'm Tracy, and thanks again for listening, and know that we wish you health every day.
And now, medical myths and facts with Dr. Richard Curtis.
Most of us assume that memory loss is an inevitable part of aging. We picture the brain slowly wearing down, cells dying, connections weakening, and thinking becoming slower. But scientists have discovered something fascinating. A small group of older adults called superagers. These are people in their 80s whose memory performs as well as someone 20 or 30 years younger. A new study published in Nature suggests one reason why. The answer may lie in whether the aging brain can still make new brain cells. For many years, neuroscientists believed that once adulthood began, the brain stopped producing neurons. You were born with what you had, and that was it. But more recent research suggests that at least one part of the brain may continue to generate new neurons throughout life. That region is called the hippocampus, a small structure deep in the brain that is essential for forming new memories. In this study, in Nature, researchers examined donated brains from several groups of older adults, people with normal aging, people with mild memory problems, people with Alzheimer's disease, and superagers. They looked for signs of adult neurogenesis, the process by which new neurons are born and mature. The scientists searched for three stages of developing brain cells: stem cells, which are like newborns, neuroblasts, which are developing cells, and immature neurons, which are almost fully grown. What they found was striking. Superagers had roughly twice as many developing neurons in their hippocampus as typical older adults, and far more than people with Alzheimer's disease. In other words, part of their brain appeared to remain biologically young, still producing new cells that could support memory. Even more interesting, the new neurons in superagers showed genetic characteristics that seemed to protect them from the effects of aging. The Alzheimer's brains revealed another clue. They actually had many stem cells, but very few developing neurons. That suggests the brain still has the raw material to make new cells, but the process may be stalled. If scientists learn how to restart that process, it could open entirely new ways to treat memory loss. Now, this study won't settle the debate. Some neuroscientists still question how much neurogenesis really occurs in adult humans. But the findings point to an encouraging possibility. The aging brain may be far more plastic and adaptable than we once believed. And the lesson may be simple. Some brains age normally, some decline, but some seem to keep renewing themselves. Understanding why could be one of the most important clues to preserving memory as we grow older.
Low vision and blind persons in the Worcester area are fortunate to have a support group sponsored by the Massachusetts Association for the Blind in Worcester. The group meets monthly at the Worcester Senior Center and provides information and resources to assist with daily living, assistive technology, transportation, and friendship. For more information, please call Marion at 508-754-0672. Again, that telephone number is 508-754-0672.
What's your vision?
My vision is 20/200.
Light perception in the right eye, zero vision in the left eye.
No. What's your vision?
My goal is to become a journalist.
To be able to work.
Financial independence.
At the Massachusetts Commission for the Blind, we believe that all people who are blind or visually impaired should have the opportunity to work and thrive. To learn how we can help you meet your employment or workforce goals, call 800-392-6450 or visit mass.gov/MCB.